I always had a private doctor. I didn't think I needed VA care. Then I learned VA is ranked above private care systems nearby and costs less. I'm getting the best care of my life with providers trained to treat veterans. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hey, hey, this is Jonica and Mark, and you are listening to Address Unknown, episode 28, where we are going to be talking about our first time visiting the country of Argentina.
Thank you for listening. As Jonica had just said, we are going to be talking about our time in the beautiful country of Argentina. To get to South America, we had our second longest travel time of this entire trip. We flew from Tangier, Morocco to Madrid just to get on a flight that would depart the following morning from Madrid, heading to our first stop, which is going to be Bogota, Colombia. About a 10-hour long flight. We had a three-hour-long layover in between at the airport lounge, and then we boarded our final flight to Buenos Aires, Argentina, where we landed 6 hours later, just after midnight local time.
Yeah, so not only was this our longest travel day since leaving the States on October 11th, 2023, where we flew from Minneapolis to LAX, and then from LAX to Sydney, but it really was our first time having jet lag also in over a year since that trip.
Yeah, it's usually like a 2 hour to like 4 hour travel time, and that's kind of it. So you don't really experience, and that's not on a plane, that's like in a train or a bus. Yeah. So you don't experience the jet lag at all.
I think the biggest time change that we've had in over a year has been like 2 hours. Like it hasn't been much at all.
Nope.
So the long travel day with the 4 hour time change hit us much harder than we thought. That combined with the very late nights that come with the Latin culture, it really got to us. We were really exhausted. We talked about it because we knew obviously Latin culture very different than where we've been spending, especially like the last few months. I guess not so different than Italian culture, but still even a lot.
Oh, significantly later. Different. Significantly.
I'm talking about like food, like dinner times and stuff like that.
No, but they go hard after dinner.
Yes. Yes.
In Argentina.
Yes.
It was tough.
Yeah. So like in New York City, right? The prime time to get a good dinner reservation, right? Is 8:30, right? I feel like that's like kind of the clutch time. It's not too early. It's not too late. If you got a dinner reservation in New York City at, 10 or 11 o'clock, you're kind of getting the bottom of the barrel. Like you're the late ones. You're the last ones.
We've made room for you, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. In Buenos Aires, 10:30 is the prime time reservation, which means that you're not getting done with dinner until after midnight, which for them is totally normal. And this is not just on weekends. This is every single night. So you're getting done with dinner at midnight, which means you're not going right to bed. At least I can't. I can't sleep on a full stomach after I've eaten a steak the size of my head. And so everyone just keeps going out. So very hard to get on the time change because of just the culture, the late night culture that is Buenos Aires, especially. We had rented an Airbnb in Soho, Palermo, which ended up being the perfect neighborhood. It was very safe, super cool vibes. Really great jumping off point for the other areas that we wanted to explore. During the day, we usually took the bus, which, truth be told, at first was a nightmare to figure out. You have to buy a Sube card. So that's kind of like your Metro card, right? But everywhere we went to buy the card told us that they didn't have them or that we had to go to the subway station to buy them. So we went to a couple of different subway stations and were told that they did not have them. So finally, after over an hour trying to buy this stupid card.
We went to 7 places to try and buy them. And they would just say, oh, no, go 3 blocks further and there is a subway station or a kiosk and you can buy it there. And
kiosco.
We'd go to said kiosco or subway station and they would say,
no,
we don't have those.
Yep. So finally, I was getting extremely frustrated. A policeman came over who spoke really good English and helped us out. And let me just pause for a second here and talk about this for a minute. So we were super excited to get to a Spanish-speaking country, right? We had not used our Spanish in over a year. So we're super rusty. But, you know, we can manage. We can get by. And so we are excited to put it to use. Hardly anybody in Argentina speaks English, which was very shocking to me. I thought for sure there would be more English spoken, or at least we could get by on some Spanglish situation. On top of that, their accent, the rapid pace at which they speak, and just altogether different words that they have versus our Mexican Spanish, made it so like we do not understand anyone and no one understood us. So we're asking for these cards and they have no idea what we're saying. So they just tell us that no, they don't have them. So going back to the policeman, the station did have the cards. The person just did not understand what we were asking for.
He declined direct. Like when I asked him, do you have these cards? And he was like, no, we don't have that.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, I started losing my temper. It was fairly evident I was losing my temper because we were now at the seventh location. And someone yelled over across the platform to this police officer. And he was like, hey, they speak English. Can you come help them?
Yes.
And that is when we were assisted by this kind officer.
Yes, which was great. So we finally got our cards. We got some money on the cards. And because you have to use these SUBE cards for all public transportation. Yep. So you can use them for the trains, the trams, the buses, subway, all of that. So like I said, we did take the bus a lot. It was just the most convenient for us and where we wanted to go. But that's super interesting as well. We learned very quickly, like you get on the bus and you have to tell them what stop you're going to, and then they charge you accordingly.
Which makes like a lot of sense because if you're going like four stops, it should be cheaper than if you're going the whole distance, right?
Yeah.
But unlike many metro systems around the world where it's a flat fee of $1.50, $2.75, whatever it is, however long you're in the transit system, they really, on the buses, try and go by where you
distance.
Which makes it a challenge if you don't know where you're going.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So we did our due diligence every time we got on the bus to know where we were going to be getting off. And oftentimes we'd just have up the map because, again, they couldn't understand us. At night, though, usually just to be a little bit safer, we did take Ubers, but those also are like incredibly affordable. On Sundays in Buenos Aires, in the San Telmo neighborhood, there is a huge market, massive, massive market. Outdoors is sort of like a flea market, right? With a bunch of different vendors selling antiques, but also some handmade goods, jewelry, all that sort of stuff. There's a ton of street performers doing tango amongst the crowd. And then there's this really cool indoor food market where there's tons of restaurants, food vendors. And we had an amazing lunch that day in the market of grilled meats because, you're in Argentina. So, of course, you're going to eat the meats. But it was very good and very fun to just sit there and watch the crowds go by. And then after lunch, we met up with the brother of one of Mark's friends to just have a drink and catch up because his wife is a diplomat and they had just moved back. They're from Argentina, but they had just moved back to Argentina 6 months beforehand. They'd been living in Mexico City for quite some time, but more on him and how we have that connection later on from Farber. But after the market, we were heading to the football, or for Americans, soccer game. River Plate was playing Talleres Córdoba at El Monumento Stadium. Farber had found some affordable tickets online, which was shocking because I think we had read, and I had even looked, and the tickets were like insanely expensive, and they're very hard to get, actually, because people go to the games.
Well, to be clear on this one as well, they sell only season tickets.
Yes, that's
so right. So the confusion for us was, how come there's not a box office where you can go and say, I would like to sit in this section and pay the fee for that?
Yeah.
They only sell season tickets, and people then sell them on StubHub and SeatGeek, things like that, of an Argentinian version of it. But you then buy their season ticket from them. And we were actually given a card that is the season ticket. And then we have to return it to the owner because that is how you get into and out of each and every game.
Yeah. So the dude mails.
He shipped them from Northern Buenos Aires to our Airbnb.
Yep. And so they were there waiting for us when we checked in, which was great. But we are super excited because we've been trying to see a football game all over the world, anywhere that we've gone, and it just has not aligned. You know, obviously watched a lot on TV when all the different tournaments were going on.
The Euros.
Yeah. But never an IRL game. So we are super stoked. So we learned quickly that there is no drinking allowed in the stadium because the crowd just gets way too crazy.
Yeah, they outlawed it a couple of years in 2009 or something.
Yep. So that means that there is a lot of pre-gaming that goes on before the game. And the traditional drink in Argentina is Fernet and Coke. It sounds disgusting. I was not super stoked to try it, but honestly, it's not really that bad. The also the local traditional way to drink it is by taking a liter of the plastic soda bottle, cutting it in half, and using the bottom half as your cup. So people are just walking around drinking out of these cut in half liter bottles of soda.
It's very communal because you think to get to the half amount in the bottle, you have to pour half out. So yes. You obviously have already made drinks somewhere else.
Yep.
And then you have this half liter that's full and you cut it in half, as Jonica said, throw in the Fernet, throw in the ice, and they're walking around. Literally, it's like a big gulp, but it's clearly like a used 2 liter bottle of Coca-Cola.
Super classy. Super classy. We met a number of locals. These guys did speak a little bit of English and had a fun time drinking with them and talking with them. But then it was time to make our way to the stadium. They're strict. We had to go through 3 different security checkpoints before finally making our way to the stadium, where I will say these are the sweetest seats I've probably had at any game anywhere in the world. We were literally the second row right in the middle of the stadium. So we were basically like on the pitch.
On the 50-yard line.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So on one end of the stadium is this crowd band, which plays the entire match, like the entire time. They don't stop and everyone's singing along and going crazy. The other interesting thing is that fans from the visiting team are not allowed at the game. So it's only the local team's fans that are allowed, again, because like the crowd, I think there's been some violence and stuff that has ensued. So even though Cordoba is not far away from Buenos Aires, there are no Cordoba fans there. There's banners and flags everywhere, and these are all made by the fans. There was no, I don't know if it just wasn't working, but there was no big screen.
The big screen was there, but it was clearly not working. Yeah. You could see through it.
And the timer wasn't working.
There was no clocks anywhere. Yeah. You didn't know.
We had no idea how much time was left of the game.
You go to a Twins game in Minneapolis, and there's like, not only other games that are being played and the scores, there is a clock which shows how much time is left in the game. There is a clock that tells you generally what time it is during the day. None of this shit is evident in the stadium. There's no digital anything.
Just not working. But it was an insane experience. It was super fun. They didn't win. The home team did not win, which was disappointing. So we left a little bit early to try to avoid the massive crowds that were going to be exiting. To go wait for the bus. And we were like the first people in line waiting for the bus, but that bus never came. And so we did end up getting a taxi.
45 minutes later after sitting at the bus station with no bus.
Yeah, that was really, though, our only big public transportation fail in Buenos Aires. So that wasn't so bad. So the next day we visited the Cementerio de la Recoleta. A massive cemetery full of huge and elaborate tombs, one of which does belong to Evita. So it's a very famous cemetery. I think mostly it's all the like very aristocratic rich people of Buenos Aires are buried here. But we also took a tour of the Palacio Barolo, which is this building that's incredibly elaborate. And it's a business building. It's all offices and stuff. But it reminded us a lot of the Fisher Building that we toured in Detroit when we were making our way from New York to Minneapolis way back when we first started this adventure. Both buildings were built and opened in the 20s. And so that's very apparent, obviously, by the architectural style. After that tour, we went up to the rooftop and had some apps and drinks and had a lovely view of the city. While we're in Buenos Aires, we had 2 amazing meals, although you don't really agree with the first one. I liked it. The first one, it was at Mishugana, which is a modern take on classic Jewish foods. There's a lot of history when it comes to the Jewish people in Buenos Aires, even though a lot of Nazi and Nazi supporters fled to Argentina, where they were actually able to seek refuge to avoid being
tried.
There we go. That's the word, tried. So, but there is a very large and thriving Jewish population in the city. Another place we went with a 1030 reservation was Don Julio. This is classic, fancy Argentinian steakhouse. Basically, every blog will tell you to go there. Every person will tell you to go there. It was very good. And then as far as like bars and clubs, obviously, this is a very late night city. And we did go out a couple of times. But our last night, we found ourselves at Uptown Bar. You walk down the stairs and you're like, holy shit, I'm in New York. Like, I'm walking through a train station right now. Like, it's all the signage for like the 456.
Yeah, the subways, train station stops are like there as you walk down. And you're sort of like, oh, this is like the JMZ as you're going down the stairs. And you think it's kind of hokey. And that's just the first like signage of the bar that you're going to. And you're like, okay. But the entire subground bar is made to look like a subway train station.
Yeah. You jumped the turnstile to go through.
They have a train. They have an actual metro train that is in the bar that you walk through to get into the entire space. And then it's like a huge like nightclub environment, like a three-story nightclub.
Yeah. It was crazy. It was fun for a brief moment to be transported back to the subway in New York City. But with that, it was time to say adios to Buenos Aires. Way too short of time, especially given our jet lag, sleep deprivation, all that sort of stuff. But we'll be back again. Highly recommend it. Super cool city.
Leaving Buenos Aires, we flew on an hour and a half flight to the city of Cordoba, which is kind of like central southern Argentina, I would say. Mm-hmm. Why Cordoba, people may ask? This goes back a long way to 2001 when I was backpacking in Amsterdam. I met a young man who was 2 years my junior, and his name was Pablo Ponticelli. Pablo and I had both recently arrived in Amsterdam at this time, and we were on a mission to find the same type of entertainment.
Young men entertainment.
Well, not like red light district stuff, but everything else that Amsterdam has to offer at the age of 18 and 20.
Okay.
So we got along immediately, and Pablo and I just hit it off, and we continued traveling for another week and a half or so into Belgium, where we spent a few more days before we separated and went in different directions. But at that time, we just said, let's keep in touch. And so 2001 was like internet cafes. So we like emailed each other. I'm like, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. After that, we evolved to like the Facebook platform. And we're like, hey, we both are in our own countries now and have our own lives. And then we got now, current day, to like Instagram, which was like, this is what I'm doing professionally. And this is sort of, so we kind of pen pals, if you will, but like distant pen pals. We remained in touch for these 23 years. Pablo now has a wife, just like, you know, I do from time to time. And he has two kids and he's got his own production company. So we've both kind of seen each other grow up over this period of time. So as I was telling Pablo through our chats, like, hey, my wife and I are planning this trip around the world and it probably involves the country of Argentina. And he was like, you have to come. You have to come visit Cordoba. And I said, okay, I don't know where Cordoba is, but we'll see what we can do as we're coming through from Buenos Aires. True to form, Argentinian that Pablo is, he was like, I'm going to pick you up at the airport. Hmm. And he did right away. Like
who picks anyone up at the airport anymore?
He left work to come pick us up and drive us to the family's Airbnb where we'd be staying for the next week, which is located in a well-known college town. The upside to any college town is obviously cheap entertainment, cheap food, and cheap drinks. The downside to any college town is two people who are in their mid-40s are surrounded by college students.
Mm-hmm.
Children at this point, and mm-hmm. we kept viewing them as such. Like, are they? That person doesn't look
like,
18.
No way are they in college.
No way.
Of course they are.
We got used to the occasional loud groups of kids in the middle of the day, like just yelling or like, especially in the middle of the night, this would happen.
Yes.
Right around 3-4 in the morning, you'd get like some woo girls or some like guys yelling about something.
We're still in Argentina. So that late night culture still continues, even though you would think you got to get up and go to class the next day. Nope. Doesn't matter.
The accommodation that Pablo and his family provided with us was great. We had total independence and it was like right in the city, so we didn't have to drive anywhere. We didn't take a bus anywhere. Nice. It was really awesome.
And very, for the most part, walkable of a city.
Yep.
Yeah.
In Argentina, you must also try an asado. And we didn't know what this was. This is not to be confused with the asado portion of beef, which is like used for tacos in the United States. But an Argentinian asado is a barbecue consisting of several parts of the cow, as well as portions of pork. Mm-hmm. It is an overwhelming buffet of meat with some, there's some salad mixed in, but mostly meats.
Mostly meats. And it's like, it's a labor of love, right? Like it takes a long time to prepare because it's done over a coal fire. And so this meat just has to sit and cook and marinate for hours.
Yeah. And it's like everything of the animal, like and it's in courses, which is also very interesting. So you kind of start with kidneys and intestine and like tripe, that type of thing. And then it moves on to the short ribs section of the cow. And we're talking like four different settings of meats.
It's a lot of meat.
And so for us in this particular case, Pablo hosted us on a Saturday afternoon and provided us with a full educational seminar of how the asado works. And then, of course, what drinks are to accompany the asado. Knowing very little about Argentinian culture, we thought, hey, let's bring some Fernet and Coke.
Yeah, we're cool now.
We thought that'd be fun.
We know what the drink is.
And for those who don't know, Fernet is like it's a liqueur. It's like a digestive. It's a bitter.
Most people know Jägermeister. It's a better.
It's an Italian version of Jägermeister.
Better version of Jägermeister.
Yeah.
But you don't shoot it.
Very popular, actually, for bartenders in New York City to shoot. Very popular for like.
They do.
Yes. Oh. Yes. But Argentinians, like Janica said before, you mix it with some Coca-Cola Classic. Mm-hmm. So it's a sugary, caffeinated, and bitter concoction, but it's a staple in Argentina. But we don't drink soda or pop for all of our Midwestern listeners. We, Janica and I, probably gave up drinking soda or pop like years ago. There's just too much education saying diabetes, you're going to die. Don't drink
really
this.
Bad. I'd rather drink my calories in wine
than
Coke.
So for, let's say, like 10 years, I haven't bought a liter of Coca-Cola.
God.
So I go into the grocery store and like I fuck this up right away. I grab the first bottle of Coca-Cola in a 2-liter I see and get the Fernet. I'm like, okay. And so we show up at the barbecue, at the asado. And Pablo immediately is like, what is this, man? What did you bring? And I was like, oh, you thought you'd like this. It's Fernet. And he's like, that's Coke Zero, man. He's like, total faux pas. And it's so... I got he insulted our host by bringing Coke Zero, and little did I know that both are to be kept cold. You should bring them to the party cold.
Yes, very cold.
Ice cold. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the greatest.
It's the thought that counts.
It wasn't the greatest introduction.
It's the thought that counts. And Sol, Pablo's partner, drinks Coke Zero like it's gone, like she's not gonna be able to get it tomorrow. So that whole thing got drank anyway. And then they had the regular full up Coke
so normal.
We were fine.
Yeah. Continuing with the same subject matter here, which is Argentinian beverages, most people also might have heard of mate.
Oh my God.
For those who have never seen someone from Argentina traveling anywhere in the world, like anywhere internationally whatsoever, they're holding mate. Mate is it's similar to green tea, although I wouldn't tell an Argentinian that because they will debate whether or not they are similar and they will argue it in favor of it being separate entirely. Mm-hmm. It's loose leaf green tea, mate, that is put into and packed into this like oval shaped cup, and there is a metal straw that sort of protrudes out of it. Some of them are metal cups with a leather case. Some are ceramic. Some are wood. Now everyone's going for the Stanley Thermos, like aluminum cups, because it keeps the mate warm. Anyway, the accompanying this mate cup and the straw is the thermos. And this is always full of hot water, and it's used to top off the rough, like loose leaf tea that's in the mate
and
cup.
And like a big thermos. Like people
like
walk
a liter,
around
a liter and a half.
Cradling this thing like a fucking baby in their arms everywhere you go.
And don't get me wrong, there is very serious methods to this. And Pablo was nice enough to sit us down in his living room and be like, so here's the, it was like a
the process.
Yeah, it was like a tea ceremony, but mm-hmm. it was for mate, right? Mm-hmm. So he explained, this is where the straw should go in. This is the temperature of the water needs to be at a certain setting, because it can't be too hot. It'll burn the tea, or too cold. It won't really bring the flavor out of the tea itself. Mm-hmm. In fact, in Argentina, they make teapots and tea kettles that are, they have a mate setting.
They sure do.
Not a coffee, not hot water, not a temperature, mate setting. Overall, it's a very serious thing in Argentina, so I don't mean to insult. You invite a friend to have a mate, it means that you want to have a serious conversation about something. If you're doing like business interactions, you'll share a mate, and it's like sort of...
Which means you are drinking out of the same straw everybody.
That's also true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that also true. So not to knock this cultural beverage, but I can't think of any other country that travels with their certain item, what they call it, like their heritage item they must have.
Yeah. I mean, we've made fun of you this whole trip, because you're sitting on the beach. It is 40 degrees out and these people are drinking mate. They're drinking a hot beverage and they don't stop. And like Mark said, they bring it with them all over the world. So you know right away, you see someone drinking out of this cup and you're like, that's an Argentinian. There they are. They're just sucking on that straw.
I tried to make the inner, not an argument, but a friendly conversation with so many people in Argentina. I was like, so do Japanese people bring chopsticks with them when they leave Japan? And do Italians bring their espresso with them when they leave Italy? Like,
but I mean, chopsticks I can fit in my purse. You're not carrying around
a thermos.
Thermos, a cup, a straw, your bag of the tea. Like, let's be real here.
But they couldn't defend it either. And most of the time, the Argentinian people just laughed. And were like, you're right. It's a thing for us. We can't change it. It's our culture. So, you know, I quit trying to make an argument out of it after that.
We will still make fun of it.
Since we were in a town with plenty of nightlife on offer, the following night we decided to source out the best location for reggaeton music.
Heck yeah.
Which we found was at a club called Studio Theater. When we got to the doors of the club, I like went up to the bouncer. There was no signage to explain what was going on or a process for getting in.
A bunch of like people milling about. So you're like, are they waiting to get in? Did they already get in and now they're coming outside to smoke? Like, what's the situation? No clue.
Yeah, so I go up to these like two muscular dudes. And I'm like, can you tell me is there room in the club tonight? Like, what's the process? And they just both, one of them puts up his hand at me and he's like, tranquilo, we'll all get in. And I was like, I didn't think I was very aggressive. I was just trying to ask what the process is for entering said club. I don't do lines for this. I'm not waiting in line to get into a reggaeton dance club in this college town. A few minutes later, the friendly bouncer came over to us and he was like, hey, you can enter.
Yeah. And he's like, where are you from?
Yeah.
And we're like, the United States. He goes, oh, lucky.
Lucky. That's
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, cool. Thanks, dude.
It ended up being a very cool night of some serious reggaeton. It was some sweaty bodies in extremely close proximity. And
it was fun.
It was a lot of fun, actually. Yeah. It did. A great experience. Having taken in the nightlife of the city, we also thought it appropriate to visit some of the museums and churches. Our favorite was the Museo Superior de Bellas Artes Avida, better known as the Avida Fine Arts Museum. So in this particular case, the Fine Arts Museum in Cordoba, it was built in 1916 for a prominent local physician and surgeon who was also coincidentally owned the largest limestone quarries in the area at that time.
There you go.
It was their like family home where they lived, and at their passing, they donated it, including their collection. And it now houses not only the classical art that they had collected as a family, but also a huge modern art selection. So
yeah, I was going to say, I feel like fine arts is very deceiving for what is included there. Sure, there is some fine art, but even when we're walking into the museum, the woman that we bought the tickets from was like, okay, so it's mostly fine art. And I was like, okay, I was like kind of prepared to be bored. And I wasn't, like, the art was incredible. It was super cool. A lot of really unique stuff. Three levels, plus the basement is primarily where the fine art was, but I would say it's primarily a modern art museum.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the basement also included the history of the family, how they got to this part of town and who built the museum, everything.
Very cool. Highly recommend.
Yeah. And again, the other nice, because we talked about being a house. So the architectural element of the house itself, you walk in and there is this massive opulent staircase, like the one Leonardo DiCaprio descends in the movie Titanic, you know, where it's like you go up top and it splits two ways and comes around the top. It was really, really cool. So it's just a great, aside from the art, great museum. Mm-hmm. We also had a wonderful dinner at Bros Commodore, which is a newer restaurant in Cordoba. And it sort of segues off of our classic Argentinian. Like mm-hmm. I didn't get, it was not all meats.
No.
One of the amazing churches that we visited, there are two that are certainly noteworthy in Cordoba. The Iglesia Sagrado Corazon, which is right by where we were staying. You could see it from a window of our Airbnb.
Huge church.
Multicolored. It is not terribly old, but it's all concrete and colored concrete. So it's red and yellow and blue and green, and all the columns are different. So it's very unique for South American type churches.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was the famous one for Cordoba, which is the Cathedral of Cordoba. Super old. It's next to an old, is it a nunnery or a monastery?
Sure.
That's next to her?
Yep.
It's super cool. And anyway, worth stopping if you're in Cordoba.
Yeah.
We spent our final night in town among friends with Pablo and his wife Sol in their backyard, where we tried to work on our Spanish as best we could. They worked on their English, and there was a lot of miscommunications and obviously a ton of laughs.
A lot of Google Translate coming out.
Lots of that. A lot of Google Translate. A lot of Fernet and Coke.
Yeah. Yes. It was a late night. It was a very late night. I kind of thought, oh, we're going to go over, we'll have a few drinks, and then maybe we'll go out to dinner or go out afterwards. We didn't get home until 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were like, come over at 7. And we were like, oh, okay, we'll have drinks and hang out, and then we'll go, like you said, we'll go eat.
Yeah.
We had to order pizza.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and some
empanadas
mm-hmm. as well to get
big
us
big box us, empanadas.
Get us through.
Yep.
All right. Before we get into our next destination, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
All right, we are back. Address unknown, where we are talking about our time in Argentina. So, from the city center of Cordoba, the next morning, we were being picked up and driven about an hour outside to a town called Jesus Maria, where we were heading to a place that has been a dream of mine for a very long time. We were going to be staying at Estancia El Colribi, an all-inclusive hacienda located at the foot of the Sierras de Cordoba Mountains, which basically means it was a super fancy yet homey horse ranch. It's part of this very nice group called Reales Chateau, and basically what they do is they curate fancy yet not stuffy properties, right, that you can go to all over the world. And Courtney and I had actually stayed at one of their properties, Ballyfin, in Ireland. And it was crazy because the second we walked into this place, I was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm in Ballyfin. And then come to learn that they're run by the same group. So it makes sense that they had a similar vibe and feel.
Realis, from what I understood, they basically market and cross-market these types of high-end luxury stays.
Yeah.
So they have, you know, the
all over the world.
Yeah. The particular family that actually owned the hacienda we stayed at has 7 properties, and they have some in France, some in another one in Argentina, and then some in Italy. And what they've done is they say, okay, we own these. We like, you're
every place is privately owned. So yeah. It's not like this group owns it.
Right. You curate your own hotel experience, and then Reales comes in and says, hey, the people who are staying at this horse ranch in Argentina may also like to stay in the French Alps at this place, or in Morocco at this place. And they have like a book the size of a Bible that you can go through and see all the properties, and it talks about each and every owner. So uppity bougie shit, but at the end of the day, really a smart idea, and there's consistency across them. So
yeah, and I think, again, they don't own these properties. I think what they do is they invest in them, and they help market them, and then I'm sure they get a cut of the profits.
Right,
the place.
Right, they're doing all the marketing, so yeah. Anyway.
So we walk in, and it's this huge open floor plan room, which has this lounge area and the bar, and it leads over to the dining area. And there's this huge, one of the biggest fireplaces I've ever seen in my entire life, which is always burning. Our room was off the back end of that fireplace, very large and traditionally decorated. There was an outdoor pool. which it was too cold to use, but it was lovely to sit by and catch some rays in the afternoon. Three meals a day included breakfast, pretty traditional American kind of style breakfast. Lunch was always lovely, made to order that day. They'd have a couple of different options. There was always a dessert with lunch even, and of course a dessert with dinner. They were great about my gluten issue. They were very conscious of that. Like everything could be made gluten-free. And it was incredible. And of course, like I said, this is a horse ranch. And so I got to go riding twice a day. So we got there and they're like, okay, what would you like to do this afternoon? And we're like, okay, we're going to have lunch. And then they're like, at 4:30, would you like to go horseback riding? And I basically almost started crying. And so every night at dinner, they would come over and kind of ask you what you wanted, you know, for your
schedule for the next day.
Things for the day, right? Mm-hmm. So every morning I would wake up and there would be a 9:30 horseback ride for an hour. Then I would come back and I would eat breakfast and we would do something else. And at 4:30, we would go out for another ride. And these horses were incredible. If you've been listening along, we've had some sketch horses, some of the most challenging horses I've ever ridden. But these horses were just incredible, very, very mild mannered, but they could go. So once our gaucho, which is the cowboy essentially in Argentina, who went riding with us pretty much every single time, figured out that we were actually pretty good and pretty comfortable on horseback, like he let us do kind of what we wanted. There was another couple there from Boston the entire time that we were there. So a lot of times it was just the four of us and our gaucho who would go out for these rides. So it was great. But yeah, so they let us canter and gallop all over this property. And the great thing was, too, is they have a lot of land and they were very cognizant to make sure that they brought us on a new trail basically every single ride. So we weren't doing the same thing every single day. There's a spa at the property, a gym room, which you used when I would go horseback riding in the morning. There was a warm tub. I'm not going to call it a hot tub because it wasn't that hot, but still nice after a couple rides a day. A sauna, a steam room. Like I said, the food was incredible. We had a wine tasting included one evening. We got to go visit the farm where they grow like all their own produce. And there's llamas and goats and sheep and cows and chickens and geese and everything, you name it. It was like incredible. It was literally heaven on earth and incredibly magical 3 days. And I think you weren't super stoked about it, but
it's expensive and involved horses. Yeah, I wasn't very excited about it at all.
But it's so much more affordable than these types of places in other countries in the world. Because like I've looked at doing this for years, and this was definitely not insanely expensive for what we got to experience.
No, we'll get into it later. Foreshadowing here, love and learn, but it was a very pleasant experience. The entire thing.
Yeah, it was incredible. So yeah, another place that I basically started crying when it was time to leave. But unfortunately, after three nights, it was time to leave. But I will never forget my stay at that beautiful hacienda.
Leaving the horse ranch, we continued our path west and took a quick one-hour flight to the city of Mendoza, also known as the wine region of Argentina. We had booked a wine tour with Trout and Wine Tours, which consisted of a full day of visiting three vineyards. And I just want to take a moment. I'm sure people have experienced this, but let me just discuss the wine tour and how this usually works, and as far as socially how it goes. You get picked up in the morning because it's a whole day thing. So they pick you up at like 8:30.
I think we got picked up at 8:30.
And it's usually a van or a shuttle bus or something like that. That if you pay more, you can get a small car, but it's usually like a sprinter van type thing.
We kind of like to do these in groups. You can do them privately, but you'll get into this. This is right. Why we like the group dynamic.
And geez, we just came from the horse ranch. I didn't need any more booze in my life.
Oh God.
So we get in the van or the shuttle with I think 8 or 10 people or something. And the group, when you get into these things, and this is consistent throughout the entire trip we've done these wine tours, and this is what happens. Everyone's silent. You get in and you say, oh, hey, hello, buenos dias, good morning. And then it's kind of quiet until the guide turns around in the passenger seat and says, hey, here's where we're going to be going. You know, take it easy. We have another hour and a half drive, whatever it may be. Then you go to the first vineyard and people start to talk a little bit And this kind of coincides with the fact that the wine's being consumed at like 10, 11 o'clock a.m., right? And by lunch, everyone has, you know, turned the page and we are all chatty Cathy.
We're all best friends.
Everybody's chatting. Everyone's talking.
Sharing life stories.
Oh, you wouldn't believe it. And then this happened. And the conversations go from like person to person and group to group, all between one another. And so you're kind of getting full. And then the ride home starts. And the ride home becomes very quiet in the van. And then you start hearing people snore. Mm-hmm. And you start hearing people basically going into like deep sleep mode. And that happens all the way until you get back to town. And then people are sort of woken up and disrupted once we arrive back at their accommodations to drop them off.
Yeah,
I've not seen this reoccur in a different way in any wine tour that we've been on for the day.
No, that's the equation. And then you arrive back to your hotel, nicely buzzed, and in your case, always having taken some sort of nap. I think actually I fell asleep for a little while too this time.
Hmm. No
Which
comment.
Which is rare for me.
No comment.
That is rare for
That's
me.
That's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. Mendoza itself is not a large city in comparison to Buenos Aires or Cordoba. And this is since most of the population of Argentina resides in the latter towns. However, Mendoza is very quaint. It has tons of parks.
So many parks. For like the size of the city, the amount of parks are insane.
It has tons of plazas. Mm-hmm. There's actually one very large park that sits above the town. And I went for a run one day up there. There's a rowing club. There's an entire rose garden. There's like food trucks. It's probably half the size of Central Park, maybe. So for a town like Mendoza, this is large. Yeah. It's unusually large. It's great.
A lot of green space.
Lots. Beautiful. One of the best meals we did have when we were in Mendoza was at Ana Bistro, which we didn't really have a plan for eating anything, for like meals or reservations in Mendoza because we didn't really know what to think.
I had like a list. I did some research and I was like, these restaurants look pretty good.
But we came across Ana Bistro and it was great.
Oh, it was incredible.
And again, maybe because it delineated from typical Argentinian for a little bit. It was on.
I had steak still.
But it was not the same. As
yeah.
It
yeah. It was fancier. Also, really good wine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously.
All said, the city was more lively than we anticipated, I think. And it was good. I think it's good for 2 to 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
2 nights, 3 days max. That's kind of all you need in Mendoza.
Yeah.
But very beautiful if the weather cooperates.
Yeah. I mean, because one thing, we didn't really talk about it, but you go to these vineyards, which are much closer to the Andes Mountains, right? And they're stunning. You're kind of standing at the base of them, and this mountain range is huge.
They're snow-capped, yeah. It's like huge, huge.
Yeah, and this time of year when we were there, there was still a lot of snow on the mountains. So that was really beautiful to see and look at and provided an incredible backdrop for photos.
After Mendoza, it was time to say goodbye to the South American country of Argentina, and we were on our way, continuing west, to the country of Chile.
Where we are now. All right, let's take a quick break before we get into our loves and learns for Argentina.
All right, my dear, what is your love for Argentina?
I mean, this is not going to be a shock, but of course my love is our time at the ranch. I have never been able to ride 3 days in a row, let alone 2 times a day. After the first day, I rode my favorite horse. I can't remember.
Regalito.
Yeah.
Regalo is a present or a gift. And Lito is small.
He was my little gift. And he was such an amazing horse. And we befriended our gaucho. Mark and him were having this bromance when we were riding one day. He was just a young child of 20, 21?
21.
21.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
We're practicing our language. We were speaking each other's languages and growing out.
We're now Instagram friends, which is great.
Yeah.
He knew that I loved this horse, and so he would bring this horse for me every time to ride for the rest of the trip, which was just incredible. And I would love to purchase Regalito and ship him to the United States. So, you know, just keep that in mind. And this is one of my like horse dreams that I finally got to live out. And not only that, but the place itself was also just so amazing. So obviously that's my love.
I clearly saw that one coming. Okay. And I don't know this one, but what is your learn?
So It was super interesting to observe and learn about the Argentinian perspective on life. So in Argentina, it seems like, and from what we kind of talk to people about, unless you come from or are somehow able to make a shit ton of money, work really is not important to you. Spending time with friends and family is what matters. Most people live paycheck to paycheck, and interesting enough, they only get paid once a month. So when people get paid, they go out hard, right? Like they have people over, they go out to the bars, they go out to the clubs, but spending time together. And all of this knowing that they might not have enough money to make it to the end of the month. Most people know that they will never be able to afford a car or a home or a condo. So it's not as though they see any incentive to work that much harder because why? You're going to have a little bit more money, but you're not going to be able to like make these big life-changing purchases. So working that much harder isn't more important than spending time with your friends and family. And this is evident too by the way the country functions, right? And the way that people go out and live their lives. You simply can't stay out until 2 or 3 a.m. every day and go to work by 8 a.m. Like that's not a thing, and they don't. Things close in the afternoon, right? Like the grocery stores close. And so things just take longer. The lines at the grocery stores take forever. Those are some of the longest wait times we've had in a very long time. Eating and drinking at a restaurant takes a long time. Getting into the club or bar, everyone is very tranquilo. But obviously with this attitude comes a country that is very self-focused and really doesn't seem to care much about the larger world. Like they're very much like we're in Argentina. That's where we are. That's kind of isolated. There's not a lot of thought going on to traveling to other countries, experiencing other countries and cultures. It's really just Argentina. So, you know, it was strange. It was very interesting, if not frustrating at times when you were there. But they have a lot of pride and they love their country. And they value the time that they get to spend with their loved ones above everything else. Just no comment. Huh? Cool. All right.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you on any of that. It didn't need to be, you know, my learn. Like I it was yours. So I was okay. Waiting for you to express what you've learned.
Okay.
That's all.
Cool. All right. What's your one emphasis on one? Love.
Got it. This is just one, guys. Sorry. Sorry to disappoint my fans who have been requesting multiple loves and learns. Jonica has curtailed that activity. So my one love of the country of Argentina, and I will say that we have experienced this elsewhere throughout this trip, but I'm going to bring this back home with us. I'm going to sort of put this in my memory bank for when we get back to the United States, is that this culture specifically really values the quality time with family and friends. And I don't mean in any way to diminish our friendships or our relationships with our family back home, because we certainly value them, right, without question. But there's something, and I don't know what it is, that's like, what's more important is like what your work, where you are in your professional life, your status, and like your financial gain. And I'm not trying to say like I've changed my way of thinking about the world. It seems as though those are oftentimes prioritized over the idea of spending time with your friends, even though it may mean leaving work early. It may mean leaving your work to go pick up your children and spend time with them instead of working late or working on a weekend. And so seeing my dear friend, Pablo Ponticelli and his wife, Sol, you know, the way that they chose to prioritize spending time with their family and saying, we're going to have all of our friends over, and this is like something that we're going to spend the whole day on Saturday doing. I was very influenced by it. And most nights, Pablo would be like, hey, let's go out. I can't spend a lot of time, but like, let's go out and have a beer together before I have to go home to the kids and help Sol get them ready for bed and do dinner and all that stuff. So I know we were guests in town, but he still made a point of checking in with us every day and was like, hey, what's your plan for today, guys? What are you going to do? So for him, it was very clear to us that fostering these relationships and retaining these bonds are what is actually important and not putting in the overtime and doing the job ladder and then jumping to company to company to make more money. Like, that's not what the priority was.
Mm-hmm.
I know that this all sounds like super cliche coming from somebody who is currently unemployed and
hasn't worked.
I've been like a year and a half. Yeah. So this all sounds real condescending, and it's not meant to sound that way about people who love their profession and really want to like work super hard. It's just that you only have one time on the planet. So spend the time with the people you care about. Don't spend it with coworkers because you think that's going to get you somewhere. That's my point, really. Anyway, jobs come, they go. Friendships and relationships with family, those are really the important things. And yeah, I just have a different perspective on it, I guess.
Great. I'm looking here and I say, what's your one learn? But it's looking like there's more than one.
Three for Argentina. The first one, and we touched on it. This is one of the learns. Is the football match in Argentina. And this is probably consistent throughout South America, but they are insane. And they are insane experience. And it's a cultural spectacle like nothing I've ever experienced. So given the chance to see a football game in a South American country or a European country or an Asian country, anywhere you can see one, South America was a specific unique one, though.
So really, this should have probably gone underneath your love. You just tried to make it look like you only had one.
My second learn is, and you also touched on this somewhat, is the economy. And this was really tough for us to understand. And I'll give a few examples and I'll keep it short. When you go to an ATM Buenos Aires, anywhere in Argentina, you can only take out $50. That was the max we found. You could only take out up to the amount of $50, and that costs you $9 to take it out. That's the fee. So
thank God for that Charles Schwab card that reimburses us our ATM fees.
So you not only is it you can only take out $50, up until a year ago, when the new president came in and the new government came in, the largest denomination was a $2 bill, equivalent to $2.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to buy dinner, and a lot of places will not take credit cards. You had to carry literally the size of a brick if you wanted to go out somewhere.
Fat stack.
Yeah.
And it was, I had to use a hair tie around the money.
Oh, yeah. We stopped using our wallets because the money would start to like crack the leather in our wallets. So we just used Jonica's hair ties. Mm-hmm. It was like rubber band banks.
Mm-hmm.
So that contributes to the way that I think the people of Argentina deal with their day-to-day. And they kind of are like, we don't know, based upon inflation, which can skyrocket all over the place, which is why the money is so... There's so many zeros on it. They don't know. If you save a bunch of money, it could be worth nothing a week later. And if you're looking to buy a house and you're like, I'm going to put all this money away, 2 months later, 2 years later, after you've saved all that money, you could find out that inflation struck and you can't afford that house.
Mm-hmm.
So they really live in the moment. And that's something that we found to be very difficult to understand because there's no foresight. There's no future plans. I mean, on the whole, this is what we experienced, I would say. But it's also because they look at this and they're like, there's no reason to. Like, mm-hmm. why think so far ahead about something that has no dependency?
Yeah, that they can't control.
They can't control it. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to why they like get paid and they go blow all their money on week one. And then I met a girl and a guy when I was at a bar one night, and they were like, yeah, week one, we blow all of our money. And as long as we get to the end of the month, if we're eating rice with our friends and it's the last few days of the month, we're still happy because we're eating with our friends, even though we have no money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like a foreign concept. But you think about it and you're like, if there wasn't the FDIC, if there wasn't a continual paycheck every 2 weeks that I could guarantee from my employer, then sure, this you're going to live like that.
Live your life.
All right. My last one, bringing it all home here. After those 3 days on the ranch, my opinion about horse riding has changed.
You learned that you love riding horses?
I am now supportive of the idea after years of disliking this experience. Maybe it's just the Argentinian horses. Maybe it was the ranch. Maybe it was our 20-year-old gaucho, Arnan, who and I just kind of, he's 22 years younger than me, so no big deal. But we got along very well. The ranch and the experience on the horses, I've never ridden horses 3 days in a row. I was sore, mm-hmm. but
it's such a good workout.
It was also just like so worth it. And we ran. I mean, I felt like
you almost
a
fell off.
Real cowboy. I almost fell off
you
hard.
You almost fell off bad.
But
it was very scary for a minute.
My learn is that you can gain confidence on horses that translates to your ability to do it on other horses, other places in the world. And I think it'll be okay.
Okay. I love that. All right, so with Far Wars basically two loves and two learns, that's going to do it for episode 28, Argentina. Next, we will be talking about our time in Chile, where we are right now, as we continue to explore more of South America. So, until next time.
Bye.